The sports desk at the Columbus Dispatch presents the Buckeye Extra Basketball Podcast.
With your host, Ohio State basketball beat writer Adam Jardy.
Brandon Batista, give me the rock. Here it goes. Up, up, and away. Slam jam, bam. And now he does a little dance.
Now, the Buckeye Extra Basketball Podcast.
The Buckeye Extra Podcast is brought to you by Rosati Windows, Central Ohio's number one replacement window company.
Hello, everyone. This is Adam Jardy from the Columbus Dispatch. Today is Friday, April 23rd, 2021. It's my official duty to welcome you into episode 198 of the Buckeye Extra Men's Basketball Podcast. Welcome to Jubilation City. Right off the top here, shout out to my best first buddy, Liam. Happy 7th birthday, buddy. It's a big day in the Jardy household. So since I last recorded, we've had three developments of varying significance, and we're going to get into each of them here in this podcast. In no particular order, here they are. On Thursday, we learned that Ohio State assistant coach Terry Johnson is leaving the Buckeyes to take an assistant coaching position at Purdue. Friday morning, we spoke with soon-to-be fifth-year senior Kyle Young, and what is our first real interview with a player since the season came to an end. And there's no shortage of ground to cover with Kyle, whether it's the concussions to the decision to come back, to his hopes for his final season, to what it was like seeing the season come to an end the way that it did. We're going to get into as much of that as we possibly can, because I feel like we could talk to Kyle for a significant period of time to go over everything. So, of course, you can read about what he had to say at BuckeyeExtra.com, where my story will already have been posted by the time you're listening to this. But there's a lot of ground, like I said, to cover there. And then also, not necessarily news per se, but on Thursday evening, I caught up with Musa Jallo, and we discussed his decision to transfer to Charlotte, what the end of the season was like, and he gave some exclusive insight into that decision, as well as a key factor that impacted his redshirt junior year. And I think in the business, they call that a tease, because we'll talk about Musa in the third segment of this podcast, so make sure you stay tuned all the way to that point, because it was a fantastic and I thought illuminating interview with Musa. So hopefully you like it. And by the time you're listening to this as well, that story is posted on BuckeyeExtra.com, so you can read at least the gist of what he had to say. Now, before we get into all that, though, I want to remind everyone that you can subscribe to the podcast on iTunes by searching. I guess you can subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, Spotify, Google, wherever you enjoy the finest of podcasts, by searching for Buckeye Extra Basketball Podcast. And that way you won't miss an episode. It is the off season, but this is the second podcast of this week. There's no shortage of things to talk about, and that's not going to slow down anytime soon. So if you subscribe, you'll automatically get the newest podcasts as soon as our man Patrick Flaherty, the Podfather, publishes them. And while you're subscribing or downloading, please leave a review, please click 5 stars, and please consider telling a friend. Thank you to everyone who has taken the time to do that. And shout out to our guy, PDD95. Keep fighting, man. So I first started to get word on Wednesday afternoon that something was in the works with Terry Johnson. And honestly, my first reaction was surprise, because I felt that whenever he would move on to whatever the next job was, that it would likely be a head coaching position. So the first word that he was being mentioned as an assistant at Purdue, while he has significant ties to Indiana, I was initially surprised. It didn't make a lot of sense at face value to me why he would take another job within the conference that sort of felt like a lateral move. So when you look at what he's done at Ohio State, now he was at Butler before Chris Holtmann took a job there as an assistant. And then when Brandon Miller resigned, or I guess took a leave of absence initially, and Chris Holtmann was elevated to interim coach, Terry remained one of his assistants. When Chris Holtmann got the Ohio State job, he ultimately obviously brought his entire staff with him. And that included Terry, who it's my understanding did interview for the position, but obviously didn't get it. But he was at Butler for 10 years before leaving and going to Ohio State. He's been with Chris Holtmann for the last 7 years. And his primary responsibilities basically forever have been as a defensive coach, as well as a big man coach. Story I never wrote, but always kind of wanted to, is the fact that he's roughly 5'10" and he coaches big men. And I always thought there was something really, really neat about that. So in this move to Purdue, he will get to coach the offense, which is that's obviously a change. And it's something that makes him going forward a more well-rounded, I think, candidate for head coaching job. And it just it gives him a chance for a little bit of a fresh start and a chance to maybe like add a different chapter to his career. It is interesting to look at this Ohio State team this past season and how much we talked on here. And I'm certainly not pinning this all on Terry Johnson. We've discussed the defensive talent that this team lost from the roster this season before. But it's fair to wonder in the offseason as they evaluate everything from scheme to personnel to coaches and heck, even maybe the media coverage for all I know. It's fair to wonder what sort of changes might have been forthcoming for the Ohio State defense this season. Ohio State finished 82nd nationally in adjusted defensive efficiency, according to KenPom.com. That's the lowest mark in the Chris Holtmann era by a wide margin. And granted, we're talking about four seasons. But when you go back and you look at it, and I had some of this pulled up, but Ohio State was actually worse in Thad Matta's last season when Ohio State finished 99th in adjusted defensive efficiency. But the first three seasons under Chris Holtmann, Ohio State was 15th nationally, 25th nationally, and 19th nationally. So, you'll take that. You'll certainly take that. But as we discussed all throughout the year, this was a team with a historically good offense and an abnormally porous defense. And it is interesting to wonder what sort of defensive changes could have been in the making as far as what Ohio State might look like next season, because it's clear that what they did last year didn't work. And I think they've addressed that somewhat with the addition of Jamari Wheeler. I think that certainly upgrades the defense. I think adding Joey Brunk also helps the defense, although I don't know that it does on the perimeter necessarily. But changes were probably coming in some way. And maybe this just gives Terry, and like I said, an opportunity for a fresh start and a chance to do something different than what he's done for the majority of his coaching career. Something that I was asked a lot on Twitter in the last 24 hours or so, did this impact Efton Reed deciding to postpone his decision? And my answer to that is no. Ryan Peden has been the primary recruiter for Efton Reed, not Terry. So I don't see this as having had it. I don't see the two situations as having been linked in any real way. And I'm not pinning the fact that Efton hasn't committed to Ohio State on Ryan Peden. My understanding is that between Holtmann and Peden, they've put in significant work on Efton Reed. And for one reason or another, and I'm still trying to get more details on that, it didn't work out. And ultimately, you know, Efton hasn't committed anywhere, but it didn't have anything to do with the potential for Terry Johnson to be taking a job elsewhere. There's a quote in the press release from Matt Painter about Terry, and he said, quote, "Terry comes to Purdue with a wealth of experience at successful basketball programs. He has had success at both Butler and Ohio State on the floor and in recruiting high-quality student athletes. He will be a very welcome addition to our program, and we are excited to welcome Terry and his family to Purdue." Holtmann has always spoken very highly of Terry. I don't think that this changes any of that. He's publicly stumped for Terry to get a head coaching job. It's clear in my conversations with people in the program, around the program, current players, former players, they admire and respect the heck out of Terry Johnson. Counts for a lot in this profession. Personally, I've enjoyed getting to know him these last couple of years, getting to write about him occasionally. He was never a guy that really wanted to be in the spotlight. We had a conversation this season. One of the stories that I wrote was how Ohio State wasn't playing well in an early, very early game of the season when they were at the Covelli Center. And they called a timeout, and Terry lit into them. And because they were playing in an empty arena and a small arena, we could hear him very clearly. He ended up being the lead to my story. And he said something to me at some point during the season about how, like, that was kind of new territory for him. Like, he was surprised that we would notice that, or that would be part of the story. So kind of a guy that has always done well at just sort of doing his job. And I feel like kind of, I don't know if I want to say blending into the background, but very quietly going about things, in a way that I think people have gravitated toward. Once you kind of got to know him and work with him, like I said, very well regarded I had a, if you go back, you can find the podcast. It was not quite a year ago, but as we were dealing with social justice issues last summer and dealing with the, protests and things here in Columbus and in Minneapolis and elsewhere, Terry and Quadrian Banks and Terrence Dials all came on the podcast, and we had a very open, engaging conversation about race and about growing up as a black athlete and what it's like to see what this country had been going through. And this, I mean, these are difficult issues to speak of. And Terry was very forthcoming and willing to engage and to talk about it and to try to, move the ball forward a little bit. It was a very, I felt like it was a very important interview, and it was a very eye-opening interview. You can go back and find that. I'm not sure what episode it was off the top of my head, but, those are things that it'd be very easy for someone to say, no, I don't want to talk about that. But he was willing, and I hope, hopefully you guys enjoyed that conversation as much as I did. So now the question becomes, who takes the position? And what does Ohio State do here? And I can tell you that there's been no shortage of interest. I do believe that the staff responsibilities might get shifted around here. So I don't think they're looking for a quote unquote defensive coach or a big man coach necessarily. I've seen plenty of speculation with names, former Ohio State players. For example, Terrence Dials is on staff as director of professional development, and he was obviously Big Ten player of the year and is one of the best big men in the history of the program, but he doesn't have any coaching experience. And that's not a knock on what TD brings to the program, but it's just a fact. To go from having not coached at any sort of significant level to then becoming a full-time assistant coach at the high major Division I level and being tasked with recruiting and all the things that go into the position, that's Terrence Dials is not a candidate for this position. He could maybe potentially be a candidate for a position like this someday, but he would need to have coaching experience. So that's one name that we can cross off. I know he's working a lot right now on like NIL stuff and trying to get the program ready for how those laws and regulations will change. Very invested in this role that they've given him and trying to prepare these guys for what comes after basketball. So no, it's not going to be Terrence Dials. Other than that, I think it's a pretty wide pool right now. There's a lot of people expressing interest in the position. Obviously you want to move, you don't want to take forever on something like this, but I don't get the sense that Ohio State feels that it has to make a hire like within the next couple of days or within the next week or two. Like I think, Holtman will sift through what should be, like I said, plenty of interest. I assume he might have some names already in mind, given that Ryan Peden was very nearly the coach at Cincinnati, and that would have forced a change as well. So when I know more in the next couple of days or weeks, I certainly won't keep it a secret, but I do think it's going to be a wide range of candidates. And the last thought I have on that topic here before I take a break is that it's really imperative that whomever they hire can recruit and recruit at a high level. Because when you look at this staff, Ryan Peden has been in the running for multiple head coaching positions in the last several years, and I believe is going to be a head coach sooner rather than later. This, whether it's next year, honestly, if it's more than a year from now, I think I would be surprised. And I think that Jake Diebler is also on a similar path, and we could be looking here in 3, 4, or 5 years. He's a head coach somewhere as well. So when you look at what Ohio State needs to keep the ball rolling down the road, whatever candidate they bring in here and fill his position with needs to be able to recruit at a high level, because you're likely losing Ryan. I don't want to say likely, but I would say it's a possibility you lose Ryan Peden next year to a head coaching job somewhere, and there goes one of your two lead recruiters. So whoever comes in needs to be ready to hit the ground running there, and has to be comfortable in those kinds of settings and able to help bring in the next generation of talent. I just think that's going to be a massive part of this role, however they fill it. So now I'm going to take a quick break here, and then when we get back, we're going to talk about Kyle Young. You have to stand behind a statement like the best buying experience in the business. At Rosati Windows, their commitment to the customer has not changed since day one. Mike Rosati realizes that people have options when choosing replacement windows, which is why he appreciates each and every one of their customers. At Rosati Windows, they pride themselves on their very high standards of business ethics and customer satisfaction. They are accredited with an A-plus rating with the Better Business Bureau, a top business with consumer choice, and voted by Central Ohio as the best in business in the window category with the Columbus Dispatch. The list goes on and on, but it's important to point out that their customers voted for Rosati Windows for these awards, and it's why they can make a statement like, Rosati Windows is the best buying experience in the business. All right, so we just got done talking to Kyle Young earlier today, and by now my story is up on Buckeye Extra, and if you want to actually watch the entire video, you can see that on Buckeye Extra as well. Trying to cover all the bases possible here. We'll have the story online, the story in print, the video, and now audio. So any way that you're looking to know about Kyle Young, hopefully we can scratch that itch for you. So one of the things that really stuck out to me from the interview was Kyle Young reaffirming what Chris Holtmann told me when the decision was announced that Kyle would return for his fifth year. And what Chris Holtmann told me that day was, quote, Kyle is everything you would want in a Buckeye, tough, fearless, and an incredible teammate. He has improved and grown every year. He was heartbroken to miss the Big Ten tournament semifinal championship game and then the NCAA tournament. Knowing Kyle, he wanted to go out on his own terms as a Buckeye. He absolutely loves this university and basketball program. That message was echoed throughout Kyle's press conference here, where we covered a lot of ground on a lot of different topics. But the biggest thing for him came down to the fact that, as he said, quote, the way everything ended, not being able to play just wasn't sitting right with me. But also my thought process was, did I want this to be my last year in an Ohio State uniform? In my heart, I love this place and I want to do another year. And I think that says a lot about what's really important to Kyle. And I think that says a lot about why so many of you who are probably listening to this would probably count him as one of your favorite players. The feedback I've gotten during his 4 years from people who either listen to the podcast or read my stories or just interact with me in some fashion is that they really, really like watching Kyle Young play. And I think that's a two-way street. I think he truly enjoys the opportunity to play at Ohio State and the opportunity to put on an Ohio State uniform. And now having the opportunity to do this one more time was just something that he couldn't turn it down. And that is even knowing that, you know, they only crowned one national champion. There's 357 teams in Division I men's college basketball. And so odds are he's going to end his career with a loss, but at least it will be a loss. Or maybe it's not. I mean, I guess that's always a possibility. But however it ends, he'll have the chance to do it how he wants to. And that is being on the court and doing everything he can to help his teammates. He's mostly back to full health at this point. He said by the time they played Oral Roberts in the NCAA tournament, he said he was starting to feel a little more normal. He said it would still take a little while afterward before he started to get back completely normal and shake off the full effects of that second concussion. Here's what he said about that play, because this is the first time we've talked to him in a while since senior day. But he said it was crazy coming off of how I had the first incident happen against Michigan. I came back, recovered, was feeling great. I wasn't having any issues in any other area in my body. I was feeling great, playing good basketball, ended up getting hit in that second half. First, it was a hard hit, but I didn't really feel any of the symptoms that I had. I told them I was good and wanted to keep going. It wasn't until I sat down in the huddle and the timeout that everything came on. From that point, it was trying to recover and get my head right. It was tough watching, especially being in my fourth year. That whole time, I had the utmost confidence in my teammates. It was just about wanting to be a part of it with them. He was able to watch games in the locker room as the postseason progressed. So he said that at least helped, as opposed to just like basically being by himself, like in a hotel room. He said, early on, I was by myself. I couldn't do much, had to be alone recovering. He said, once I was able to be back with the guys, that helped, being able to talk to them and feel more a part of it. He said, you never want to have to be in that position, but things happen for a reason. That was actually something he echoed a few times, that things happen for a reason. So once the season ended, once they lost to Oral Roberts, Kyle said it was, you know, on the drive back to Indianapolis and the drive ultimately back to Columbus. He said that was something he started to think about what he wanted to do next and what the next step might look like. So Kyle said he did have some conversations with some agents to start getting a feel for what that might look like for him. He said it never really went far enough to where he felt like or where he had an idea where he might, if he decided to go pro, like where he could be playing or what sort of opportunities might be out there for him. He said the conversations never got quite that far. said it was about, you know, more about just trying to maybe start building some relationships with agents. So, you know, if he was to decide that, then he would sign with someone and go from there. But he said there weren't that many specifics they talked about. He discussed kind of where he sits academically. As I wrote last summer, he got his degree. He graduated early from Ohio State, graduated last summer, and has been working on his master's degree. He said he'll finish that up either here at the end of the summer or potentially in the fall. So that's something else. There's a lot of degrees on this Ohio State team when you look at what that roster might look like next year and how long senior day might end up being. Kyle said that what he might decide to do obviously played up in his mind more as the season went on. He said it came down to, you know, being close to my family coming back, or being close to my family coming back and playing with these guys. He said this team is amazing. This coaching staff is amazing, which of course sort of begged the question of like what could happen with this team next season? Like what's the vibe of this team? What might next year look like? And he said, quote, the way our season ended, that's not the way we would have liked it to end. Everyone has that determination to come back and work that much harder to make a difference for next season. It's about locking down now and putting in that work when nobody's watching. This offseason is going to be important for us. 1 through 15, or however many guys we're going to have, I'm excited to see what that looks like. Which then obviously begs the question of, do you talk to EJ? Do you talk to Dwayne? Guys who have decisions to make? Because it's been my experience over the years covering these things that guys respect that everyone has to make sort of their own individual decision and decide what they think is best for them. But I had wondered if, since Kyle made his individual decision, that the opportunity to come back for one more year meant something to him. I wondered if maybe he had expressed that message to EJ or expressed that message to Dwayne. And he said, my words to them were pretty much, I want them to do what's best for them. I'm going to be happy with whatever they choose to do. If they come back, it'll be amazing. He said, the chemistry we have with this team is special. I want to be able to have a full year that feels more normal and compete in the Big Ten and NCAA tournament at the level I'd like to. It's about having another year to be able to play in front of Buckeye Nation and all these fans and my family. One other thing I wanted to discuss with him, and something that we talked about, was I had wondered if the fact that he suffered two concussions in the span of 3 weeks, and he's a post player who's constantly going against bigger, more physical guys in the paint, although I think that's going to be lessened a little bit this year, I wondered if he had considered just saying it's not worth playing. Like maybe I need to end my career. And he said it's hard not to think about that because it could be dangerous as far as like continuing to play. He said, but I was starting to feel like myself again. I tried to not let that be too much of a factor in my decision. Injuries can happen anytime, anywhere. Now, adding Joey Brunk, I think, will spare him at least some of that beating. And he alluded to that as well. I mean, Joey's 6'11", 255. Kyle's 6'8", 225. And Kyle said that he told Holtman, quote, I don't mind guarding their team's biggest player, but it can definitely wear down your body when you're undersized. It'll be nice to have another big body in there that'll be able to battle with those other big dudes. One other topic that I wanted to just kind of get some feel from Kyle about is what it was like when that game ended. You know, so you lose to Oral Roberts, which was obviously a shocking loss. And then you got to drive back to Indianapolis, gather your stuff, and then drive back to Columbus. Like that was a lot. And so I asked him what that experience was like for him. Because I think this is something I plan on doing as we go through the offseason here. Whomever I talk to that was in that locker room, that was on that roster, I want to gather as many thoughts as I can from what that experience was like. Because I think there's a lot to learn about maybe this team and about the mindset and about who these guys are based on what they remember from that experience and what they took from that. And Kyle said, quote, it was very disappointing just the way things ended. And then being in the locker room, seeing the emotions from other guys, he said, I talked to CJ. There's a lot of emotions running through that locker room. It was feeling, for me personally, feeling sad that they had to go out there and compete and I couldn't be a part of it. Everything happens for a reason. Oral Roberts played really well in that game. After we ended up losing that game, I was trying to be there for the guys. We had to go back to the hotel, pack up, wait for the bus, and leave. That whole time, it was hard to process. That's when I started to think about my decision more. He was asked about Terry Johnson's decision to go to Purdue. And he said, quote, Coach T, that's my guy. I wish him nothing but the best. If this is the move that's going to be best for him and his family, 100% behind him. There's no bad blood coming from me. Coach T in his time here helped me a lot with his development. Our relationship built a lot. I wish him the best in his future endeavors. But if that's what's best for him, I support him 100%. So those are sort of the highlights there. Like I said, the story's already up on Buckeye Extra. Hopefully we'll have more interviews with guys as we continue here through the off season. That's pre-COVID. That was kind of how things operated. We'd get a different player every 2-3 weeks or so, and we'd keep having new things to talk about. And I definitely appreciated that. And I hope that that's the case going forward. But we don't expect to have any decisions on EJ or Dwayne until, I've been told, possibly June. I mean, they don't really have to decide anything until then. I did see Jimmy Soto's posted some videos to Instagram on Thursday. The players were doing some conditioning, and it was basically 2-on-2. It looked like they were playing. At first, it looked like they were playing basketball with like a weighted ball, where they're running up and down the court, passing to each other. But then when they got to the baseline, there was like a little soccer net, and they had to try to score this what looked to be a heavy weighted ball. And Dwayne was one of the players that was out there participating. So he's at least been, I've seen some other pictures of him being around, being on with the team in some capacity. So he's not like off hiding out somewhere or anything like that. I think he's at least around the program right now and going through some of that stuff. So I don't know to read anything into that, but he is at least around. So maybe that's something to take note of. So that kind of wraps up the Kyle Young interview. Like I said, you can read the story on Buckeye Extra, and you can watch the full video interview up there as well. So now I'm going to take another quick break. And then when I get out of here, we will come back and we will talk Musa Diallo and a couple more things to wrap up this episode of the podcast. So as we've discussed on here already, Musa Diallo is at this point the only player actually to transfer out of the program at the end of the season here. Musa entered the transfer portal on the last day of March, and within about 2 weeks announced that he had committed to the University of Charlotte. And I was very interested in sort of the whole process and what went into all of that. I spoke on here about a number of times just about how much I've enjoyed getting to know Musa and watch his career and some of the you know, positive things he had shown, as well as some of the struggles that he had had. And so I was able to get in touch with him here on Thursday evening to get some insight into all of this. And the gist of it, as you've hopefully read my story by now on BuckeyeExtra.com, is that it was, in some ways, it was just time for a fresh start. And Musa came to this sort of decision as he went through what had been a tough year. And when you read his statement that he put out when he announced his decision to transfer, there was a line that really stuck with me where he said, "Despite my efforts, my basketball career has been far from perfect these past 4 years, but I continue to hold high expectations for myself." And I thought that was a really interesting statement, and I wasn't sure what that meant. And as we talked about that, mostly what it comes down to is the fact that he was not able to grow and progress the way he wanted to these last 2 years because of injuries, some of which we knew about. And that's where this really got even more interesting for me. So we know that Musa took the red shirt, the medical red shirt, for what would have been his junior season, the 2019-2020 season. He ended up having two surgeries on his ankle and could not play that year. So while he was working on all that stuff, he was able to do some skill stuff, some ball handling things, just trying to keep other basketball skills sharp, even though he couldn't like cut and do things with his ankle. So when I spoke with him, he explained to me that he was fully cleared for full contact workouts in July. It was like at the end of July. And it turns out that the day after he was cleared for full contact work, he injured his right hand, his shooting hand. And the diagnosis was, he told me, quote, "I tore two of the tendons in two of my fingers on my right hand. I had a clean tear. They had to sew them back together. And then I had to do rehab to get my strength back and get the swelling down. It was a 4-month recovery." So this injury, the recovery of it, butted right up until the start of the season. And Musa said that he didn't, when the season started, we knew that he was dealing with an injury and he was still working his way back. And just assumed it was ankle related because that's what we knew he had dealt with the previous year. He said he didn't want to talk about it because he didn't want to be known as, quote, "the guy who's having a bunch of injuries." But it significantly impacted what he could do with a basketball. He said, quote, I thought I was going to be able to play better, but right when it happened, it felt like all the skill work I put in when I couldn't really move just went out the window. That blows my mind to think about, honestly, that it was clear watching Moussa this season that he was not the same offensive player than we've seen. In spot moments throughout his career, that athleticism would take over. We've seen him occasionally be able to knock down some jumpers. He's certainly a better shooter than what we saw this year. He was 1 of 18 from three this year. He's a better shooter than that. Everybody on the team, frankly, is probably a better shooter than that. It was clear that he just wasn't quite right. And I had just sort of thought that this was a byproduct of you miss a whole year of development, and then it led right into the start of the season. Like, you just got a lot of rust and things like that to knock off. But there was more to it than that. And that has a lot to do with why, as the season went on, he was just a defensive player, essentially. I mean, we would still see him flash things here and there. He was still, you know, appointment TV, basically, if he had the ball on a breakaway. I still think he was that team's best dunker. He told me, quote, I had a good amount of athleticism left and my instincts and my experience. I try to give it all for the team and suck it up because I definitely didn't feel good enough to compete skill-wise at a D1 level based on not being able to actually work on my game. He said he was missing practices. He didn't start practicing until a week before the start of the season. So he said, you know, he was dealing with that, getting his ball feel back. And also his ankle wasn't fully healed. So that was a lot. And I think that really does help explain why we didn't see the offensive step forward that we would see, or that I thought we might see from Moussa this year. He said he's still working on getting it back to normal. He's still doing like rehab, and then it's still like kind of swollen. And it's a lengthy process. It was hard for it to heal during the season, as well as then, you know, he had the procedures on his right ankle, but then he rolled his left ankle in the win at Penn State. That held him back for a while. So as he's explaining all this to me, it makes sense why sometimes you just want a fresh start. Sometimes you get tired of dealing with the same like rehab and the grind that comes with all that. And you need to start over somewhere else, even if it is at, you know, you're going from the Big Ten to Conference USA and you're going from Ohio State to the University of Charlotte. You can still have a high level of success. And that's part of what helped Moussa decide that that's where he wanted to go. Now, the Charlotte coach, Ron Sanchez, was an assistant coach at the University of Virginia when Moussa was in high school, and the Cavaliers were recruiting Moussa. So once Moussa decided to put his name in the transfer portal, it didn't take long. He said Coach Sanchez called him pretty quickly, and he told him, quote, I know the kind of player you can be. This place can really help you get to where you want to get to. Moussa said that the experience in the portal was a little bit nuts. He said, you know, when you're being recruited in high school, it's kind of, it's super exciting because it's a new experience. And usually you've got a couple years to decide and really dive deep into anything. He said, you take your time, but this time everything was crammed into 2 weeks. So I'm definitely relieved to have it done now. And I just have to focus on getting ready to go there in the summer. So the main thing he was looking for was, quote, definitely having a coach that believed in my game and believed that I could do a lot more than I showed, especially this year. A lot of that came from coaches that recruited me before and knew me as a person and a player before Ohio State. That's probably the majority of contacts that I had were just people that knew me before and also other teams that saw me at Ohio State in the earlier years. When I said it seemed like a tough year for you, he laughed and he said, yeah, he said, sure, you could say that. So, and that's when he started to tell me then about what had happened with his hand and the surgery and just how tough that was. I asked him about the decision to leave Ohio State because that all made sense. But you also got a real sense that like, his teammates really liked him, and he was very well regarded in that locker room. Guys, you know, there seemed to be a pretty good bond there. He said, quote, we definitely had a great bond this year, especially with all the COVID stuff. We could only hang out with each other pretty much. We had a blast, especially towards the end of the year. It didn't end how we wanted to, obviously, but those last couple of weeks with the team were really amazing. He said that he's closer to feeling like back to normal. He said he's still trying to get out like the scar tissue in the hand, get as healthy as he can be. We also talked a little bit about the end of the season, because as I explained to him, you know, when I spoke with him on Thursday, we essentially hadn't talked to anybody on the team since the season ended. And we did have one interview with EJ Liddell, which was primarily to talk about the horrible things that people were saying to him on social media. So we didn't really get into how the season ended and the Oral Roberts loss. So I kind of explained that to Musa and just asked him a little bit about it. And he said, quote, "I mean, it was awful. It was awful. I don't think there's been a harder ending to a season that I've ever experienced. It was just a hard situation. A lot of things leading up to that. And obviously Oral Roberts was playing with an unbelievable confidence and they had great momentum coming in. We were kind of struggling with the end of the season. So it was two completely different ends of the spectrum. And then it came together. They played great. And obviously they made it to the Sweet 16. So it wasn't a fluke, but yeah, that was rough, really rough." I said, when you're taking the bus from Purdue back to Indianapolis and then from Indianapolis to Columbus, which, by the way, I can't believe they had to do that all in one go, essentially. I said, did you think about that? Or, you know, like what might come next? Or were you too focused on like, you know, the immediate here and now of the season coming to an end? And he told me the quote, "In the locker room after the game, changing, riding on the bus, packing all your bags and walking out of the hotel, back on the bus and driving back to Columbus, it was unreal. I couldn't believe it. We got back in the locker room and everybody's just standing there like, did that just really happen? It was definitely a huge shock. There was no time to think of anything else, really." And then as a sort of wrap up here, I asked him, what will you take from your Ohio State experience? Because, I mean, this is a guy that graduated high school a year early. He just turned 21 here in February. So he, you know, passed up a senior year of high school, gets to Ohio State, deals with some injuries, has some pretty significant moments. I mean, he started the last three NCAA tournament games that Ohio State played. I think about how instrumental he was in that win at Purdue during his freshman season. And I said, what will you take away from what Ohio State, you know, what you got out of Ohio State? And he said, quote, "Definitely just stay true to who I am. Going into college, you feel like you've got to change who you are or adjust to the people around you. But the main lesson I learned is that as long as you're staying true to yourself and sticking to your principles, you'll be fine. That's what I learned." So I got to, again, give Musa credit. I really appreciated the interview. I really appreciated the chance to kind of wrap it up and rehash it and see what comes next. I don't know. So many rosters are in flux right now. It's hard to project what Charlotte's roster looks like next season. But I think it's clear if Moose is healthy, there's every reason to expect he's going to be an impact player for them. And very interested to see what that looks like next season for Musa and as well as for Ohio State. Now, a couple of quick things here before we get out. According to, I believe it was the D1 docket on Twitter, Ohio State will be playing Towson next season. So you can add that to the list. That was actually a team that the Buckeyes had on the schedule this past season, and it just didn't come together because of COVID. So looks like we'll get another shot at that here this upcoming season. And ESPN updated its recruiting rankings for the next three classes. And of relevance to Ohio State, in the 2021 class, they have the ESPN Top 100. And Malachi Branham is the number 32 recruit in the nation. According to ESPN, there's only one other Ohioan on the list. That's Logan Duncombe, the Cincinnati Moeller big guy who's going to IU. He comes in at number 87 nationally. In the 2022 class, ESPN has a top 60. There's one Ohioan in the class, and that's Akron Buckles' Chris Livingston, who's number six. He's a five-star recruit. Ohio State commitment Roddy Gale checks in at number 48. I'm surprised that Bruce Thornton isn't in the top 60, but that's where ESPN is. And in the 2023 top 25, there's one Ohioan in the class as well. That's Cincinnati Taft's Ravon Griffith, who comes in at number 23, also a five-star recruit. He's the first player that Ohio State offered a scholarship to in the 2023 recruiting class. And I did write about him last September. He had a heck of a season. We'll get to watch him for a little bit longer here in high school, but he, at the moment, top recruit in Ohio for 2023. And maybe worth pointing out that Ohio has two five-star kids in two straight class, or has a five-star kid in consecutive classes. It's been a while since that has been the case. So something to keep an eye on here, and maybe makes that that assistant coaching hire all the more pressing for Ohio State as they look ahead here to what looks like some pretty high level talent coming out of Ohio. So now I'm going to get out of here, try to enjoy the rest of the day with my suddenly 7-year-old, which is still kind of a wild thought to wrap my head around. But as always, you can send along your questions, your comments, your love notes, your hate mail, and otherwise constructive criticism to me at Adam Jardy on Twitter or ajardydispatch.com. Thank you, as always, for listening. Thank you to Patrick Flaherty, the Podfather, for pushing the gears and making me sound better. I will be back with you sometime next week. I don't know what date yet, but if you're subscribed, you'll find out with everybody else. So until then, thanks.
The Buckeye Extra Podcast is made possible by Rosati Windows, Central Ohio's number one replacement window company.
Be sure and subscribe to the Buckeye Extra Podcast in the iTunes Store, the Google Play Store, or on Stitcher.